churches and those who lead them. This is important data, and it's going to help us make, I think, important strides in our communities. As you recall, we were thinking at Pepperdine, how do we rally around and circle around our churches? And several of us began to realize we need to start with those who are in our pulpits and who are trying to lead our churches. And we know that many of them are leaving this work. We know that fewer are even being attracted to this work. So it is time for us to think about the present and future of spiritual leadership in our churches. And David and his team at Barnum have done a tremendous job. And we're very excited about the partnership with Pepperdine Cancer Barnum. So one more reminder that there are some books for sale. We're providing them at cost. They're $10 out in the lobby. There are just a few left. I believe they've been signed. And so if you'd like one on your way out today, stop by the table. Michael Menichetti in my shop will be happy to provide you with a book that I know that you will be blessed by. But let's get right into the study. And if you would, please give a Pepperdine welcome to David Kennedy.
That, Rick. And by the way, thanks again. I wrote some of the book here at your very generous offer to let me stay here for a couple of nights. I want to thank you for that. Very, very, very kind. Well, good morning. It is a pleasure to be with you here. How many of you were not with us yesterday? Just a quick show of hands. Okay, cool. So we got about half on, half off. I just want to acknowledge, we've got some of our team here from Barna. If you guys could just raise your hand, and we could all just thank you for the hard work that I get to just describe here. So would you thank them? You guys are just awesome colleagues, so it's fun to be out talking about all the great work that you guys do, and I just get to take a little bit of credit for it. So we are pleased to talk about this new study that we're working on. And we think this is going to be a pretty significant study over the next 18 months or so, and really beyond. In fact, this is an interesting fact. There are statistics that are not true. Can you imagine that? That there might be statistics in the world that are not true about pastors today. And in fact, there's a whole set of data that exists in sort of cyberspace, and it's actually wrongly attributed to Barna. And it talks about like the percentage of pastors who are divorcing and all sorts of interesting and really sad statistics. And they're actually not true at all. In fact, I thought of starting a whole separate division of our company instead of Barna Research Group. It would be the Barna Rumor Group. And it would try to dispel all the wrong rumors about facts that are wrongly attributed to us. And so one of the reasons that I'm excited about this study is that we actually get to go and be corrective, and this will be a brand new study. In fact, some of these statistics that have been misused are more than a decade old. It's a long story, but somehow this sort of became part of the urban legend of the church about how churches, how pastors were burning out, and how the vast majority of them were just, you know, like on the precipice of personal collapse. That's just not true, and we're going to see some of the things that we're finding here today about today's pastors. And so among the reasons that I'm particularly excited about this project is I believe that we're going to be finding and sharing with people about the denominational leaders and you as pastors, things about what's actually happening among today's spiritual leaders. Another quick show of hands, if you don't mind. How many of you serve today as a pastor or as a minister in a local church? All right, well, it's wonderful to have you here. My dad's a lifelong pastor of a church. I actually figured I would be in ministry. I read one of George Barna's books, and I was studying to be a pastor, but I read one of George Barna's books, and I thought, man, I like statistics also, and wouldn't it be interesting to kind of get into this type of ministry? And so that's a little bit about my own personal journey. Growing up with a pastor, in a pastor's household, there were a lot of interesting things that we had to kind of work through, and people's perceptions of pastors are so interesting. You know, it was like, I still remember my dad telling the story when he went to, it was like a Kmart or a Walmart on the weekend, and he was, you know, in Saturday clothes, and he had shorts on, and he saw one of the congregants in the aisle, and it was like, Pastor Kinnaman, you have legs. And I think what she meant was like, I've never seen you in shorts, because my dad, you know, obviously had legs, you know, in previous weekends, you know. the way people express themselves about around and you know how they think and perceive today's spiritual leaders is an interesting part of where I think today's pastors are living. We talked a lot about that, this changing culture yesterday, and how much more complicated it is for pastors to do the work that they're called to do. So what I would like to do today, I mentioned to you yesterday that we've been working on this project, and we've been looking at three different aspects of spiritual leadership: self-leadership, congregational leadership, and then cultural leadership, that is leadership within a changing culture. Yesterday we looked at that third dimension: generational change, technological, digital change, living in the screen age. And then we talked a lot about this idea of irrelevance and extremism, how it's much more difficult to be a faith leader when people think that religion isn't just like something to ignore, it's actually something that's bad. It's something that's bad for society. And so cultural leadership was really what we touched on yesterday. And today I want to talk about self-leadership and the second category there, congregational leadership. And again, special thanks to all the folks that have contributed to this project. No project is done alone, and so we've had a lot of folks here at Pepperdine and other great friends contribute, including many professors who gave us great insights into how to think about this particular study. Coming up in January, we're going to be doing a big webcast right from this very room in our partnership with Pepperdine. We think we can reach thousands of leaders around the country and maybe even around the world. We did a webcast like this 2 years ago, and we had 70 countries tuning in. And so we think that the current issues that are being shaped around spiritual leadership are so important. And so we're very pleased to be partnering with Pepperdine around how to think about what it means to be a pastor. We said this yesterday, but listen, human nature doesn't change. God's nature doesn't change. In some ways, the role of what being a pastor doesn't change. I mean, God calls us as Levites, as priests, to try to mediate this new covenant between God and man. But what is it that we need to do now in our cultural context when the questions about whether to believe this, whether in fact, you know, you look at how Catholic priests are being portrayed, relative to the clergy abuse scandal, and it's like a lot of what's happening in our mainstream media just it only looks and focuses on the bad side of religion. And so a year from now, in January of 2017, we're going to be doing this really cool webcast where we focus on these three elements. So save that date, whether you're able to come back here to this venue or not. It'll be free if you'd like to be in person, and those tickets will go fast because we're going to have some cool people come and talk about this. We're going to be sharing the results of the research, and as I said, we'll be actually officially launching this particular book at that time. Save that date. Just write it down in your calendar, and we're going to be communicating with you in the future about that. And so let's dive into the self-leadership component. And what I'd like to ask you to consider, what I'm going to do this morning, that's just a little bit different than yesterday. We talked a lot about broader cultural trends that were taking place and how it is that society is changing and obviously the generational changes and things. If you missed yesterday, it was like, it was the best. And so it was probably my peak talk of all my entire career. That's cool if you didn't get to it. I'm only kidding. Just trying to keep you awake during the morning. All right, so today what I want to do is we're going to go through more statistics related to today's pastors. And just a quick sort of reminder about the methodology. This is a national sample that we had conducted among Protestant leaders in the United States. We also did an oversample of Churches of Christ leaders, given the partnership here with Pepperdine and the interest that we have in trying to serve that particular tribe, that particular constituency. And so you'll see some of the findings. So we're going to talk about, for example, emotional and personal well-being. And we can look at the overall results among all pastors, all ministers in the United States, and then among Church of Christ ministers. And your vocation as a pastor, you can see that 3 in 4 pastors are satisfied, very satisfied with their vocation as a pastor. Your ministry at your current church specifically, this is a pretty strong number, but it's smaller than their general satisfaction with being as working as a pastor. My father, as I mentioned to you, is a lifelong pastor. And in the last 4 or 5 years, he's not at a local church any longer. He does a lot of interim ministry. He'll speak on weekends and one of the things he'll say as a guest pastor speaker is I love being a guest speaker. He's like, I get to share the word of God with you and love on you guys on Sundays, and then I don't have to deal with you people on Monday. My dad has an interesting sense of humor, as you can imagine, which we'll probably learn about a little bit more as I tell some stories about that. But you can see the sort of the tension here in that little anecdote that a lot of us, I think, as leaders feel. It's like, hey, I love what I'm doing. Maybe not so much always exactly what I'm doing today and this week and in this particular context. So that gives you a little bit of a sample for how this study stacks up as well, because we'll be looking at all pastors, and then we'll be looking at Church of Christ leaders in many of the slides that I'm going to show you. And what I want to ask us to do as we sort of head towards the end of our time together, I'll take some questions, but I'm also interested, because we're going to be really, I'd like you to think about this as being like a very big focus group together today. I'll share some things, and then at the end of each of these little sections, I'd like you to sort of say what it is that you think would be very important for us to deal with during this webcast. All right, like if we can reach thousands, maybe tens of thousands of leaders coming up in January, I would ask you to give me your feedback about, hey, I'm interested in that aspect of friendship, how it is that we as pastors can have deep friends when it is that we're in these kind of community, like we're leading and we're supposed to be transparent and available to people, but how do we make deep friendships? So just be noticing things as I'm going through this. You don't have to catch all the statistics. That'll all be coming out in that book in early part of 2017. The key thing is I want your feedback about what it is that is interesting to you as faith leaders or as people who are supporting faith leaders. All right? Okay, so let's just kind of go through some of this stuff. So how true are each of the following statements of your tenure in ministry? It has deepened my relationship with Christ at 59% who say that's completely true. It has increased my passion for ministry at 46%. Look at the percentage, the combined percentage of people who say it's been difficult on my family. At almost half of all pastors are telling us that it's been difficult for their family. It has been a disappointment to you. Again, those aren't huge numbers, but 1 in 4 pastors say that being in ministry has actually been a disappointment. And how is it that we could sort of think about what our expectations are and then how those expectations actually work themselves out? How satisfied are you with the following dimensions? I'm not going to go through all of those, but look at the fact that you can see the Churches of Christ leaders are more likely to say, just slightly, but statistically significant, to a significant degree, more likely to say that their spiritual well-being, they're satisfied in that way. But look at the fact that on many of these elements, and I'll show you another slide here in a second that's very similar in its orientation, Church of Christ leaders are not that different from other pastors. The things that they are mostly satisfied among those who are married or those who are parents are their family aspects, their marriage and their relationship with their own kids. Their overall quality of life, these are less than half, say they're very satisfied or excellent. Their spiritual well-being, their mental and emotional health. Look at only 1 in 3 say they are excellent at having true friends. Last night I was talking to my middle daughter on the way home from a dinner, and I said, Annika, who are your best friends in the world? Who is your best friend? And she paused. And said, you mean besides you, Dad? I was like, oh, man, you are my favorite kid. So smart. So, this idea of friendship, this is an interesting thing to me, I think, as we think about being in very challenging times. Like, how do we develop and nurture true friendships among us as pastors, as leaders? Physical well-being, you can see 1 in 4. Respect from community, only 1 in 5 pastors feel as though they're being respected within their community. And we talked a lot about why that is the downward pressure on respect within the community is increasing. And so we have to understand some of those trends. All right, here's some other stuff. Motivated to be a better leader during the past 3 months. How often have you felt motivated to be a better leader, well supported by the people close to you? You can see Church of Christ leaders are actually a little less likely to feel that way compared to pastors in general. Emotionally or mentally exhausted, Church of Christ leaders are just slightly more likely to say that that's the case. I'm sure it's not the Bible lectures that does that to them. Not my lecture, at least. Lonely or isolated from others, inadequate for your ministry or calling. These are all interesting things. So essentially what we do is we're perception scientists, right? Perception is what we're measuring. And And it's important to realize that these are what the way people think about their ministry is not always necessarily exactly what is true about their ministry. And it's also true that sometimes, look at that final item there, inadequate for your ministry or calling. Like, is that good news or bad news? I would think that as spiritual leaders, there's a certain degree to which we should feel inadequate to our calling. We should feel as though we're not, like, how in the world does God use something like this to do something good in the world? Because we see and understand our own brokenness, our own inadequacy. So, you know, it's both good news that only 12% of leaders are saying that's true of them, but could it be higher? Should it be higher in terms of our own sort of intellectual humility, our own ability to admit that we need God? Another set of questions we asked in the study, and this morning I was busy sort of pulling out statistics from our slide deck because there's so many things that we covered in this really cool comprehensive study. So we're kind of hitting some of the highlights. But one of the other things we looked at was the financial condition of today's leaders. And our partner, an organization called Thrivent, has developed this. They call it the 5S question. And there are 5 questions. You can see them here on your right of the different things. And these are, again, perceptions. How do people feel about their own financial condition? And you can see that half of all leaders, faith leaders, are saying they are able to make ends meet and have some left over. Actually, the highest thing on the scale is the second one that's listed there. You have more than you need for yourself and your family. Then you're just making ends meet. You're struggling to keep up with day-to-day expenses, and then you require assistance to get by. Now, one of the interesting things about this is that among church planters, I don't have the data here to show you today, but we just finished a study about church planting, and guess what? Church planters are even more likely to struggle financially than pastors in general. Here's a few other things relating to finances. I have a trustworthy, knowledgeable person to turn to for financial advice. Sometimes we look as a researcher. Sometimes we try to look at the percent of just a strongly agree or completely true of me, because that's probably a better indicator of where people are at. Sometimes we might aggregate the findings and show you kind of a combined percentage. And so when you look at the combined percentage, you know, more than 3 out of 4 pastors say this is true of them. But a lot of times when we look at these sorts of things, we might want to look at the completely true, or the what's called the top box in a survey response, because that tells us something about, you know, they're quite committed to that perspective. So look at the second item here. I'm confident that I will be financially secure when I retire. Most pastors generally feel that's probably going to work out for them. But look at the fact that only 1 in 4, 23%, said that they feel very confident this is completely true of them. And then the last one, I'm financially prepared for unforeseen expenses such as a health crisis. The same kind of pattern. You know, most pastors feel mostly that they're taken care of. But a lot of this is telling us that there's much to be desired in the well-being of today's leaders. Now, in the interest of time, I'm going to skip ahead on this stuff here. Facing a crisis or addiction. This is another set of findings, and as I mentioned, there's sort of this bar and a rumor group, the set of data that is really not that accurate about today's pastors. You know, just sort of very exaggerated numbers that are from this sort of very old set of data that's been now kind of perpetuated through digital, you know, through different websites. Whatever. Here's the state of pastors, and you can quote more. In fact, we never did that study. I have no idea how it began. But most of those, by the way, it's really funny because almost all the percentages on that purported barn study ended 0. It's like 70% of pastors are struggling with depression, 80% will divorce, you know, like 60%. Like, I've never done a study where every single percentage ends in 0. You know? Like, what do we do? Interview 10 people, you know? Anyway. Be suspicious of statistics, right? It's an important lesson. But the truth is, as we went out and did our very best scientific study, one of the largest studies of pastors our company has ever done in 32 years, we asked about whether they had experienced these particular kinds of challenges, major parenting difficulties among those who were parents, and a quarter of all pastors says this is true of them. Now, again, remember, perception scientists, could it be higher? Yeah, because we're asking them whether they perceive, whether when we use the language as a researcher, have you experienced major parenting difficulties, do you self-select into that group? And so 27% admit it. Yeah, we've experienced major parenting difficulties. 26% significant marital problems. 24%, like how heartbreaking is this, significantly have doubted their faith. 19% say that they've struggled with an addiction. And when we looked at what is that addiction, this is not the percentage of all pastors. You can see this is a very important point. The base of this question is those who have struggled. Among the 19% that we interviewed, 62% said that they have struggled with porn or sexual addiction, alcohol and prescription drugs, food, tobacco, smoking. Again, just again a reminder, like I'm here partly to give you the statistics, partly to educate you about the research process. Remember, if we were to ask a whole range of questions around whether people struggle with food or have struggled with alcohol or have struggled with porn, there's many different ways that we can sort of triangulate to try to understand what's happening with that. And so, for example, one of the things that we did recently was a separate study. We did a big project called the Porn Phenomenon. And we were looking at access to and exposure to digital pornography, and we found in that study, separate from this one that we had just finished with Pepperdine, that most pastors, because we asked more questions than just the one that we did for Pepperdine, 57% of pastors and 64% of today's youth leaders said that they've struggled with porn either currently or in the past. Again, this is just... you know, tough to talk about. Those are big numbers. It's not as big as some people have imagined it might be. Look at 21% of youth pastors and 14% of youth of pastors. 21% of youth pastors, 14% of pastors admit they currently struggle. 12% of youth pastors and 5% of pastors admit they are being currently addicted to porn. My colleague Joyce Chu, who's a graduate of Pepperdine Law School, by the way, did a lot of great work on this study. And so just a quick acknowledgement to you, Joyce. Great work. We can thank you for that. That was great. And so 1 in 5 youth pastors, 1 in 7 senior pastors, that's more than 50,000 leaders in our culture. Faith leaders who say that they're currently struggling with this access to digital pornography, primarily digital pornography. All right, so these are some of the numbers we're coming to. Again, what are the questions? Let's stop for a second. What are some questions that, as we've covered some of these things, both on their kind of emotional and personal well-being, you know, some of the addictions and crises that they face, what are some things that you're noticing? What are some things that you'd be curious about? How would you want us to frame some of this up coming up into the new year as we do the State of Pastors thing? So let's take a couple of comments or quick questions. Yeah?
So you had youth pastors and senior pastors, but how about young pastors?
In terms of looking at the differences between millennial or Gen X pastors versus boomer and elder pastors and their exposure to pornography. Joyce, do you remember if we looked at that? Not to put you on the spot, but I'll put you on the spot. We can look at it. We don't know. We didn't look at the differences. We did find, I do remember there was one example where we had youth pastors were being exposed. They were generally younger than the senior pastor cohort, and it was interesting because the way they had come across it was through social media or through other sort of digital, like they were being exposed to it through screens more than the older cohort was. So. Yeah.
On any of these, do you happen to know or do you track how these results compare to a population?
In some cases, we have that. In other cases, we don't. And so I have to go back and look at specific ones. But you know, in general, pastors are human beings, right? And so they're struggling to almost the same degree as other Christians, other practicing Christians would be struggling with them, or other human beings would be struggling with them. So, you know, that's generally what's true. The interesting thing is, when I first started at Barnett 21 years ago, there were a lot of things that I felt like pastors weren't being maybe as honest about. I still feel that's true sometimes when we ask questions about pastors. They're just like, I don't want to answer that question, or there's a sort of their there's this halo effect even among pastors as they try to present a better version of themselves to us as researchers. I feel like that's gone down a little bit. For example, in the porn study, one of the interesting things was we basically went through an online survey. We felt like that was the best, most anonymous way to do it as opposed to a telephone survey. And we went through and asked people, we're going to, you know, we had a handful of questions that opened up the survey. And then we got to a place where we said, hey, are you willing to go into some more kind of personal questions about pornography and sex and other kinds of things? It's all anonymous, but are you willing to continue in the survey? Because we don't want you to be shocked and drop out. And it was more than 9 out of 10 pastors who agreed to continue in that survey. They didn't drop. They didn't say, hey, I'm just going to quit now. So I feel like that's one of the great changes that's been happening in our cultures, that we can ask about, you know, very private things. And again, within the anonymity of the survey, we're not naming names. So that's a quick response there. In the back.
The financial piece earlier.
Yeah.
Is there a breakdown for us that this is, I know in Church of Christ, the difference between white and the African American financial piece is significant.
Yeah.
Like 4 to 1.
So. There is. I don't have it on a slide, but that would be one of the things that we'll be doing in this State of Pastors report. So just a quick restating of that question is that, can we tell any differences between ethnicity on the financial piece, or frankly any of the questions that I'm presenting to you? And in our research, we did ask about the primary ethnicity of the congregation, as well as the leader's ethnicity. And so we'll be able to provide in the back matter of that report, like the differences between African-American leaders and Hispanic leaders and white leaders, etc. So yeah, there are differences, as you say. One more question, one more comment. Yeah.
I'm just curious on the ministry of authority in the workplace or away from the workplace.
One more time.
In the workplace or away from the workplace, where they're having a problem with the report more. Are they doing it at the office, or is it something?
We did not ask that question. Whether the addiction to pornography was in the workplace or at home, we did not ask. Okay, let's power on with some more content here. Ministry preparation, just a few more things in terms of self-leadership. How well are seminaries preparing pastors to effectively lead churches today? You can see that less than one in ten said that the seminaries are preparing pastors really well. A lot of similarity between the Church of Christ tribe and the general sample. Again, it's not glaring. You can see that not at all well is 8% and 14%. Although I suppose there is a bit of a gap there at the bottom of the scale for Church of Christ. They're more likely to be strong critics, but it's still a small minority. Apparently, we have some of those critics in the room. All right, so you can see. Again, this is one of those things where it depends a little on how you're going to interpret the data, right? Because if you're a seminary leader, you say, well, look, a majority of people are pretty satisfied with what we're doing. If you're someone who has not been satisfied with your seminary experience, if you think that the higher education, theological education needs to be reinvented, you'd say, look, only 9% of all pastors say they're extremely satisfied, very satisfied with their experience. The greatest benefit of that experience taught me how to study or understand scripture, how to craft a sermon. Yeah, you can see there's none of these are particularly large percentages. What is the area of ministry that you wish you'd been better prepared for? Administrative burdens, handling conflict, balancing ministry and administration, importance of delegation and training people, and just challenges in leadership. So a lot of operational, a lot of leadership things that people are asking to have had in their training. Okay, this is a pretty interesting question to me. So what resources outside of formal education have been most beneficial in equipping you for ministry? And you can see here, the differences between Church of Christ and all pastors is negligible, statistically speaking. Books and reading, pastors or readers, that's the most common way that leaders are saying that they're growing. Conferences and seminars. Look at this, fellowship with other pastors and leaders. We're seeing a growing trend of leaders saying they don't want to just learn, you know, from a formal education process or even from the experts. They actually want to learn from their peers. They want to be in relationship with peers who are going through the same kinds of challenges. mentoring at 18%, continuing education and training at 16%, on-the-job experience and life experience at 14%, experience outside of ministry, and then denominational resources. There's the Church of Christ are least likely to say that they've benefited from that. Okay, so let's shift over to congregational sort of awareness, some of the challenges that are happening within their congregational leadership. Governance, overall, how would you describe the pastor-elder relationship in your church? Hugely supportive of you as a pastor at 67%, healthy accountability at 60%, clear and shared vision and values, a powerful partnership, fewer than half. Tell us that it's a powerful partnership between the pastor and the elders, characterized by frequent prayer together. Well, this should be a much higher percentage, even though that's one of the strengths. Again, I'm reminded of some of my dad's experiences. You know, built a very good, healthy church, a very large church in Phoenix. I think they had something like 4,000 or 5,000 weekly attendance in one of the larger churches in Phoenix there, a great leader. And so, you know, the challenges of leadership are interesting there. It's as you know, leading a business is different than leading a church. And my dad used to laugh about this, that, you know, he had a model railroad in his basement, and he does all sorts of cool models, shipbuilding and model railroads. I think he has 4 model railroads at his house now in Phoenix, Arizona. It's pretty crazy, like literally crazy. but he would say, he's like, you know, it was like his therapy. And he said one way he would sort of console himself is that he pulled one of the little characters off his model railroad, you know, little HO or whatever, just less than an inch tall, and he put them on the railroad tracks. And he said, "That's Elder Bob." and then he turned the power up. As I mentioned, that's my dad for you. great guy. Alright. Overall, how would you describe the pastor-elder relationship with your church? The negative aspects, right? Unclear areas of decision-making authority at 18%. Often has power struggles at 12%. You feel underappreciated by the board at 11%. And then one of the worst parts of the ministry, 4%. That's not a huge number, right? But if there are 322,000 clergy, senior leaders in our culture, 4%. That's more than 12,000 leaders, 12,000 individuals who are feeling that kind of pressure. All right. The strength of the relationship with the denomination, very strong. You can see Churches of Christ are slightly more likely to say that it's very strong. Obviously, denomination and the language here, this is their perception of that. And so that gives you a little bit of sense of sort of the governance and sort of their connection in. So this is the last section of content that we'll present, and then we'll do some more discussion. But what pastors say they enjoy doing and what they don't enjoy doing. What would you imagine if we asked pastors, what is the thing that you do in your ministry that you most enjoy? What would you imagine would come to the top for leaders?
Preaching?
Reading. Okay. You guys are saying way too quietly.
Mentoring,
all right. So you can maybe place your bets, and here's the actual results. Preaching and teaching, 66%, by a wide margin. Look at the things that are then much smaller by comparison, right? 10% developing other leaders. 8% discipling believers. Obviously, there's a bit of definitional kind of thing, because preaching and teaching is a discipling activity. And we shouldn't mistake it for something other than that. But to say, like, I actually enjoy the disciple-making aspect of this, is only 8%. Pastoral care at 6%, evangelizing or sharing the gospel only 5%. That's to me is a really surprising number, right? 2% organizing church events, meetings, or ministries. Which you connect that back to what we just were talking about in terms of what they wish seminary had prepared them for, like the administrative burden, right? Like, why basically what they're saying is they wish the seminary had just eliminated all meetings and eliminated all the administrative burden completely from their task list. Of all the tasks you do as a pastor, which one or two cause you the most frustration? The lack of commitment among lay people. The low level of spiritual maturity among churchgoers. Financial and or administrative duties. Implementing change in the church, church politics, conducting effective outreach ministries. Those are some of the things that come up on that list. one of the things we talked about just a little bit yesterday, and I'll just make a quick like comment about what we're learning with our research. We just did this big study on what we call the new morality. And you know that, I said this yesterday, 91% of Americans said that the best way to find yourself is to look within yourself. Right? 76% of practicing Christians felt that was true. And one of the arguments we make in the good faith research is that this new morality, things like you should not criticize someone else's life choices, 89%. People can believe whatever they want as long as those beliefs don't affect society, 79%. That's not even logically possible. Right? Like pornography is a great example of this porn phenomenon study that we completed. We looked at teenagers' attitudes about pornography. And do you know that they are more likely to think that it is morally wrong to not recycle than to view pornography? Because they've been trained in this new morality where it's like, well, you can believe whatever you want. Like, pornography isn't harmful because it's your private decision. But we're changing a whole generation's attitudes about sex and sexuality. We're affecting marriages. Where people have to work in that industry. Like, beliefs do affect society, whether we like it or not. And part of one of the challenges that connects us into sort of tie a few things together here, of what we've been talking about yesterday, is that I think, through the research, that this new morality, what we call the religion of self, basically people are choosing to believe that they themselves are judge and jury of what's true about them. And one of the crazy things is this notion of, throughout most of human history, we've had the belief that there are external sources of authority that have bearing on our life. So, for example, the church or scripture or even just generally institutions and politicians and government, even media, like there's this notion that it's like, if you're a source of authority, if you're a person in a position of authority, you have something to tell people about how they should live. But that's not happening anymore. What's happening is that people are basically choosing a source of authority inside themselves. So when people say, when pastors are telling us the lack of commitment among lay people, the low level of spiritual maturity among churchgoers, here was the crazy thing that we learned in this research, was that people are actually becoming more, Christians are becoming more oriented around this religion of self. And so I think we're going to see more and more challenges in discipleship in the next decade because we've become such a selfie and narcissistic generation in a lot of ways. And that's not just true like some other group of people or just like the millennials. It's like true of all of us. This is just an anecdote, but it proves the point about this is that I travel a lot for my work, getting the great privilege of speaking in different conferences and churches and other places. And the inevitable fight over the overhead bin space, right, on an airplane. And so I don't even remember the scenario, but I was asking one of the flight attendants, I was like, just tell me, do you think that people are like, she was a person who'd been many, many decades, I think, in airline work. And so something had happened on this one flight. I was like, does that happen more today than it has in the past? She's like, oh man, people just feel like this is like their own private airline. Everyone else is in their own, it's like everyone has their own space and the whole plane is just there for them. And if you tell them that they shouldn't have more than one bag and those things, it's like the rules don't apply to them. And there's just one tiny example. And so I'm saying, like, I feel that way, right? So this is an example of this sort of religion itself and the challenges that we're going to have in terms of discipleship. This is a wide-ranging study. We're connecting some things about the changing culture that we talked about yesterday, attitudes about religion, attitudes about morality, how it is that we're going to lead effectively in this changing culture. One of the key things that this study I think tells us is that pastors are going to have to be fortified. They're going to have to be strengthened more than ever. Because we're facing a very complex, accelerated culture, which even though they are human, then we can understand and express that they're going to have their moments when they want to run over their parishioners with a bottle train, right? Like, they're human, and we should give them the full grace that we would expect for anyone else. At the same time, we've got to find structures to support these men and women that are in ministry. And another implication is, how are we going to help fully develop the priesthood of all believers, that in fact, we as pastors, you as pastors, aren't alone. It's not just about your job to disciple 1,000 people, you know, like, or we talk about the issue of the ratio of the typical pastor to the number of adults in our culture. One pastor to every 1,000 adults. And so it's not your job to disciple those people. You've got to equip people. You've got to equip millennials. You've got to develop a team. And one of the things that we've been seeing in our research is that while we as pastors love sermon making, and that has never been more important, sermon making has never been less sufficient for bringing about real change in people's hearts and minds. We need a whole different model of thinking about how we're going to disciple people in this selfish age. Generosity, action, faith, and work. We talk about each other, the lecture series. So lots of different implications that we're very, very pleased to begin thinking that through with you. All right, so let's take a few more questions and comments about some things we noticed. Yeah, cool. Great question. So we are capturing geographic data, differences between types of communities, rural, urban, and suburban, as well as part of the country. One of the things that's interesting, and there are differences that emerge, one of the things that's interesting about research, having done it now for 20-some years, is there are differences, and they're important to note. But as you probably noticed, when we compare the Church of Christ leaders to the general sample, I know this, we're not about geography, but one of the interesting things about the way people react to data is everyone thinks we're different if you look at this factor. And usually, the differences aren't that significant. They're not as significant as just looking at the overall data. So answering a couple ways, yes, we'll have that data that will be available in the final report, but it's also an important thing to realize, like, we're more part of this type of, you know, ministry context, and the differences are often overstated in comparison to the challenges and opportunities that we face. In the back.
Do you see certain places or different churches or resources you would point us to of places that are already doing this well, of people that we can look to in terms of ministering to millennials who are incorporating kind of these challenges and seem to be doing it in a healthy way? Have you, in your travels, do you have recommendations of places we can look? That you would set up as examples.
In particular about ministry of millennials?
Yeah. Then.
Well, a couple thoughts to this frame. So just to restate this, the question here for the recording, you know, are we finding places that work, who's doing a good job, especially in relation to ministry of millennials? One of the things that George Barna taught me, my mentor and the founder of Barna Group, was that we try to notch tell you, hey, look at that church or this particular approach, because people end up trying to copy that. That was his perspective on it. I think he's generally right. I would point you to the resources that our company has done. We have a really great report called Making Space for Millennials that really goes through like culture, leadership, even church facilities, a lot of different things. So I would point you to that. Let me answer it this way. One of the things, I'll close with this because I think this is an important way of framing this. Here's the way we see this. Technical change is a really great set of leadership writings from this guy, Ron Heifetz, called Leadership on the Line, Leadership Without Easy Answers. And technical change, this theorist writes, is about fixing the problems that cause very little pain by applying the solution. So a good example of a technical problem is if you break your arm, and the technical solution for a broken bone is what? A cast, right? And so as soon as you apply that technical solution, you're good, right? once the healing process is done. An adaptive problem, he argues, is something that's much more complex, and it takes a whole different sort of system of thinking, a different way of approaching that problem, like obesity in America, right, or diabetes. The people who are facing that problem can't just apply a simple solution, although they sometimes try, and that's okay. But they, you know, there's a whole systemic issue that we have to deal with. And this is a funny story, but I mean, to answer you, this is not your question, but not too long ago, someone asked me, "We're just going to hire. We're looking for that one hire for our church to really minister to millennials." And think about what that means, right? Like, if we could just find the person who has the appropriate skinniness of his jeans, if it's in her jeans, like, they will appeal to millennials if it's going to work. And so what is that telling you? What's that person looking for? A technical solution or an adaptive solution? A technical solution, we could just get the cast and put it on, it'll be right. And again, I didn't hear this in your question at all, so I appreciate the spirit with which you asked, and I'm not meaning to make any cynical point here. What I'm asking us to consider is that in all the things that I've been presenting yesterday and today, is that I think the church is facing a tremendous number of adaptive challenges. Higher education is facing adaptive challenges. Pastors are facing adaptive challenges. The Christian community relative to the LGBT community is facing adaptive challenges. And so millennials to the church, these are all very, very complex problems that aren't just about, like, the level of the lights in your worship or having the right hire or the right style of music. These are very complex issues that we try to find simple solutions for. Great example, some of the research that we're doing and others are doing shows that millennials are actually interested in more traditional forms of worship, liturgical forms of worship, more tradition-oriented things. And a lot of church leaders are like, "Awesome, we've been so irrelevant for so long, we're finally relevant again." Right? But they're missing the point that it's actually about a different mindset, because millennials are more willing to be challenged than we're willing to challenge them. And so, again, there's some great reading from our company. Be on your own journey to find leaders and churches and organizations that are not just ministering to millennials, but are partnering with millennials, and who are facing this not as just a technical solution, a technical problem. It needs a technical solution. Can you hire the right person or have the right PowerPoint deck or the right whatever? But you're actually looking at how millennials have helped to change you as a faith community, how they're going to affect you as a leader. So those are, you know, when we look at today's state of pastors, the same thing is true. We have an adaptive problem for the way we've thought about ministry. We have a generation of leaders who are fantastic communicators. But guess what? We don't just have a lack of communication. We don't just have a group of a generation who's just like waiting for us to talk to them. Right? We keep, like, if we could just do a better sermon, technical solution will solve this great big problem. And so that's what I think is one of the key themes of what we've been talking about the last couple of days. But I'm excited about partnering with Pepperdine on this study, because I believe that the pastor is facing adaptive problems. We keep trying to address it as a technical problem. Like, can we just control our porn use? Can we just, you know, can we just have fewer marital problems? Can we just have more dollars in our budgets? Those are technical solutions to very deep problems. And so let me just pray for us. Lord, thank you for this morning. Thank you for the wisdom that you give us and discernment you give us to spend time thinking about your people and we as your people. You care much more about us as your people than you do about our programs and our projects and our platforms. Lord, would you just give us wisdom today? All of us need wisdom to rename our problems and stop looking just for technical solutions, but to learn how to be led by your spirit towards those adaptive solutions that you want us to bring. As true leaders, Lord, you want us to lead people out of the desert. And Lord, we have to lead ourselves in order to make that happen. So Lord, would you give us the grace to do that? And thank you for this study. Thank you for the participation of so many leaders in this study, the hundreds of hours they contributed to this data set. Thank you for our partnership with Pepperdine. Lord, would you bless it to bless your people? We pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you, friends.